Because of COVID-19, we were living a nightmare. Our jobs had gone. We couldn't afford the rent.
Every day, because of people's kindness, Threshold is saving 9 families from homelessness. Please support our Christmas appeal. Visit threshold.ie to make an instant gift. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking transparency and the lack of it. Martin, you do a lot on transparency.
I do a lot. I do a lot.
Please stop singing.
And it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and it's kind of thankless, Tony. Yeah, so I do. Just like to remind everybody, hands in pockets, Tortoiseshack time. Let's keep this show on the road. Patreon.com/Tortoiseshack. 40 podcasts last month. 40 podcasts. Don't tell me you're not getting for value for money.
Whatever about the value for money, I will say that it's been a phenomenal month on the Tortoiseshack, and I'm really proud of the people who we work with, the work that Linda has done in terms of exposing that server, that the people were sharing the leaked images of other women, and it's terrific to see that. But the work has to have a value, guys. So patreon.com/Tortoiseshack. It's a couple of quid for you, but it keeps us going. Anyway, enough plugs. We're delighted to be joined on the line. We've been waiting to do this for a little while, but finally we've managed to put it in the diary. Medical professional and full-time troublemaker these days. Shay Bowles. Shay, how are you?
Yeah, I like that one. That's good. Yeah. Actually, surprisingly good, I suppose. I suppose if you look at the sort of formula for this type of stuff, I should be hiding in the back of a wardrobe, drinking a bottle of gin, looking out the window. But I'm not. I'm looking at how we can keep the momentum going with trying to challenge some of the dysfunction that we've been trying to highlight. And yeah, I'm in good form, and the people who've been helping me out are in good form, and just looking forward to maintaining that momentum if we can that we've sort of garnered over the last month or so, really.
Let's pretend that people have been under a rock or hidden away for the last few weeks and they're not familiar. What is it that brought you to light, and where did this story come from, Shay?
I suppose the story relates to the biggest chunk of the story relates to a document which was handed by the Taoiseach at the time, Leo Varadkar, to a guy called Matthew O'Toole, who was a friend of mine. Still, I would consider Matthew a good human being, a good doctor, but we can get into that later on. But essentially, it's about the Taoiseach of the country, the leader, the prime minister, for those listening outside of Ireland, handing a document worth probably up to 200 million euros to a friend of his when that friend shouldn't have had that document. The friend at the time was the head of an opposing union called the National Association of General Practitioners. And this document had been negotiated with the Irish Medical Organization. It was subject to changes. It had confidential and offer distribution plastered all over it. It was basically passed by the Taoiseach at the time to a friend of his. Now, Leo Varadkar maintains that he was doing this in order to foster unity in general practice, which just doesn't wash. It's a sort of a fairy tale, reverse engineered narrative. I think the dogs in the street know he was forced into that narrative because we caught him and we exposed it. I suppose so. That took off in the media. People start to talk a bit about how often this happens. Leo the leak, Leo the liar, Leo the lawbreaker. And I suppose what it really does is puts colour to how sort of a backslapping elite at the top of Irish politics seems to interact with the elite at the top of various representative groups and bodies, particularly medicine, probably construction, and probably banking and finance as well, I'd suggest, if you look at other individuals who tried to do what I've done. So I think that's sort of a bit of a picture of what's occurred over the last month.
Okay, so we essentially know the facts. The facts are, and these are not denied by the Taoiseach, then Taoiseach, that he sent a confidential, an agreement that was marked confidential, not for circulation, to a friend, but not a friend, or whatever definition he wants to put on that. And that gave them access to information they shouldn't have. Okay, where do you come in on that story?
I have sort of a background in healthcare in Ireland. I was in the Army Medical Corps for a while. Back in the early 90s, I worked as a phlebotomist there. I kind of worked my way up in the private healthcare industry in Ireland. I started a couple of companies which were fairly big that won significant HSE contracts back in 2004-2005. And sort of I've worked my way up. I ended up sort of, I suppose, in the VHI's home care division after selling a company essentially to the VHI in 2009-10. I became the chief executive there for this home care division to try and move patients out of hospital. It was quite a revolutionary concept at the time. You know, I talked to you for hours about why we shouldn't send people to hospitals and why they're a Victorian construct where we put all the sick people together in one place so they can get sicker. But we could do that another time. But regarding how I came to be, I suppose, at a fairly high level of access in the system, was through that. I sort of left the medical sphere for a couple of years, went off, did a few other sort of midlife crisis things. I bought a cafe, a big store, a big shop. I went off and tried to get it out of my system. But, you know, about 2 or 3 years back, I thought I just have to come back and try and challenge it. It's so dysfunctional health. I started a sort of not-for-profit concept with a guy called Neil Pope, which was called Community Hospital Ireland, where we take the 30% of people who probably don't need to be in hospital at all today and try and get them into the community, employ people locally, local doctors, GPs, consultants from the hospitals, going out into the community to keep people well, build fences at the top of the cliff rather than put ambulances at the bottom, which is what the hospital system does, essentially. You know, we wait for people to get really sick, hospitalize them, institutionalize them. So we built this really dynamic concept whereby we would try to keep chronically ill patients well. We tried to monitor them. We're using technology, use locally recruited people to chaperone them, mind them, and then use local general practitioners to treat them at the beginning of exacerbations of illness rather than waiting for them to end up on a trolley in a crowded emergency department. We had significant backing from really high-level people here and abroad. We had a really good board. We'd been with the Department of Health. We'd been with the GP Union, the NAGP at the time. And I met this guy, Matthew O'Toole, who was a very dynamic, young, very bright star, the youngest president of the National Association of General Practitioners at the time in its history. Matthew's a very bright, literate guy, very good in the media. And I approached him. I wanted to get general practitioners behind this idea that we would shift care into the community rather than direct everybody towards emergency departments and into hospital care. Me and Matthew became friendly. He agreed to support it as the head of the National Association of General Practitioners. And during that period of promoting this community hospital, not-for-profit, may I add, concept, I was asked to go and have a look at the governance in that union that association. I think it had about 2,500 members, according to the union. They'd had some financial difficulties. There was rumors that there was some sort of governance issue. So Matthew and then president, a guy called Andrew Jordan, asked me to do a report and look at it. And they offered me the job as the chief executive of it as well, if I wish. So I went and did the report, which essentially discovered wholesale dysfunction. No accounting system, people appointing their own salaries in the organization. I think there's an investigation going on from the Garda National Economic Crimes Bureau into it at the moment. There certainly was, so I can't go into it in too much detail. But my report led to, the recommendation of my report was to wind up this association immediately, that there was wholesale financial impropriety, potentially fraud. Nobody seemed to know where the member subscriptions were going. These are ordinary GPs in good faith paying subscriptions to be represented. And it was as bad as I'd ever seen. And the problem with it is, if it was a small single man sole trader company, you know, you wouldn't be too concerned. But this was a national representative body with significant, intellect on its council, with you know, significant access to the top politicians, to the minister, to, and subsequently.
And look, can I just come in there, Chair? Let me just take you back to that. You know, you don't call yourself a whistleblower. You don't like the moniker whistleblower. Mm. It was through this process that you got to the information that the Taoiseach had, or sorry, the then Taoiseach,
yeah,
had leaked information to ostensibly a pal of his who was in a position to do something with it, which, yep, is what it was. Why
did he do it, or why?
No, why? Why did you think it was relevant?
Well, I'll tell you why. Several reasons. I've been trying to develop a community-based not-for-profit service, which was consistently challenged by significant powers within the system, that it needed to be changed to a for-profit system, that a not-for-profit wouldn't be taken seriously, that people, this is coming from high-level people, ex-chief executives, you know, the highest level. That, you know, unless this was a for-profit, nobody was going to take it seriously. The state wouldn't contract with it, that it would be seen as amateurish. Now, the reason we wanted to make our community hospital concept not-for-profit was that we wanted ordinary citizens and ordinary people to engage with it on a community level, to feel it wasn't another private company trying to predate on the dysfunction in our health system. So at the end of 3 years of pro bono work on that, which I didn't get paid for. I didn't charge for any of the work I did. And I suppose to have a small business running myself, which I didn't need to potentially. But after 3 years, I saw that what I thought was a really noble concept being totally subverted and actually sent towards a private company with, in my view, the blessing of the HSE and senior officers within the HSE. So at the end of that, I kind of did a review of everything I'd done. And I just thought, in order to stimulate real change, I think the public really need to understand how things get done in the Irish system, in the Irish healthcare system. Now, remember, healthcare in Ireland is, it's tens of billions of euros a year is spent on our system, which I frankly think is highly dysfunctional. Only social welfare absorbs more of the public purse. This is our money. I think the spending in health and how we don't see it anymore. I think in the Irish psyche, it's just don't go to ED, an emergency department. Don't go down there. You'll be there for hours and hours. And when I was working on this stuff with Michael Smith in the village, unfortunately, every day when I went down to Village's office on the quay, there was a guy sitting outside the offices with a paper cup, a homeless guy. And after passing him three or four times, I stopped seeing him. And I think the public in Ireland have stopped seeing the dysfunction in health. They've stopped seeing how dysfunctional the whole political interaction with health is. And I think I wanted to put it on the agenda. And I thought a way to do that would be to show that a document which is clearly marked, and it's accepted by the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach at the time, that he's done wrong. I would suggest that he's broken the law, and we'd be aiming to pursue that. But I thought this would be a way to show the public that if you know people, you get things done. If you know
that's not a new concept in Ireland. We all know that. We know, you know, this is how things work in our opportunity, or did the opportunity just present itself? Or, you know, were you actively looking for an opportunity to show dysfunction, or did you go looking for it?
Well, I was asked to go looking for it in the NAGP by the president and by the council. I was asked to do the report.
No, I mean now in relation to
the transfer of the document.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't. I didn't go looking for it. And the way I was given this information, I didn't harvest it from anywhere. I didn't, discover it as part of the investigation. So I was given it. I was handed it, and it was shared with me openly. And I just thought, now remember, this stuff has taken, God, I've been working on this with the village since last April. And, you know, we had to be very careful that we'd investigated all the legalities, and and that took a lot of time with COVID and stuff. So as soon as I could, I got the story and I got it out there. And my motivation is, I suppose, there is an element of frustration for me. It certainly wasn't financial. I saw up close when I tried to do something which was not for profit, which was focused purely on the patient, how unsexy that is at the top of Irish politics and in Irish healthcare. You know, it's just not, it doesn't feature. The further I climbed up the ladder in the system, the less I heard the patients being discussed. And by the time I got to where I got, they just weren't discussed at all. What was discussed was budget, representation, reversal of cuts, it was all about individuals. And of course, in politics, the whole raison d'etre of being a politician is to be reelected. And I just felt it was time to sort of break this to the public and hopefully use it. Like, I don't want to pull anything down. I mean, there are significantly functioning parts of our health system, but, and I'm not about just, rolling the grenade in and saying, oh, look, this is bad, we can't fix it, which is the narrative that perpetuates the dysfunction.
I would put it to you, though, that the idea that you threw the grenade in and walked away is kind of what is out there, because, since then we have seen, there's been accusations of what your motivations are. There have been things said about your character and people have undermined you as an individual and the work of Village, Michael Smith in the Village. Do you feel that the state itself has given this the seriousness that you feel it is, or do you think that maybe you made missteps in how you portrayed it at the outset?
I don't think we... the reason that I went to Village was because I believed Village was the only publication. And that, remember, Michael Smith in Village is the man who essentially precipitated the planning tribunals by putting up rewards for information on planning. So if Michael Smith hadn't done what he did back then, we wouldn't have had Ray Burke. We wouldn't have had Liam Lawler. We wouldn't have known about this stuff. So I looked at that. I didn't think the mainstream press would be interested in it. They'd be scared of it legally. And just to mention, despite the fact that Leo Varadkar has consistently and a few times said he's going to launch some sort of legal challenge, I've had no notification from anybody legally that I'm going to be challenged about what I've said. Neither has The Village, who published the articles, and neither has Michael Smith or anyone else involved.
Yet the screenshots became the story. The issue with Dr. Matthew O'Toole, who I have to confess I also know and have had a lot of time for. So, there's, when you see that and then you put that in the context of this backwards and forwards and this relationship towards power, and how people, the dynamic is, and how power can be used to influence others and create these dynamics. It does call into question whether he was I don't think he was ever the story, and yet he became the story.
He wasn't the story, but Fine Gael and the Tánaiste would like everyone to think that's the story, or I'm the story, that I would had some sort of motivation here financially, or I had some sort of falling out with Matthew O'Toole. I've spoken to Matthew O'Toole several times in the last 10 days. Matthew O'Toole is not the story, and it's very important that people understand that. The political machine wants to deflect from the reality of the dysfunction. Now, what I revealed is a tiny piece of how dysfunctional our politics is, in my view. And it's certainly a tiny piece of how dysfunctional our health system is. And remember, when you're dealing with something that, is spending tens of billions of the taxpayers' money every year and producing such awful outcomes, I mean, the only thing that the Irish health system seems to do now, aside from a couple of innovations in recent times, the only thing it seems to do well is doing things badly, And we are accepting that. And this, in my view, defines how crooked things can be at the top. Now, Varadkar suggests that he gave this to his pal to foster unity in general practice. The whole raison d'etre of the NHEP and the stated aim, it was to essentially undermine and destroy the IMO with whom this contract had been negotiated, but it hadn't been voted on. And it was subject to change. I think there was 30 changes after the point at which he handed it to his friend. If it was some sort of noble endeavor, why didn't he do it publicly? Why didn't he publish it? I've never come across a politician who's embarked upon a noble endeavor covertly. The whole concept of a noble endeavor from a politician's point of view is to get more votes, more plaudits. So why on earth would Varadkar have done that? That's the first thing I'd suggest. Secondly, if Varadkar was friendly, but not that friendly, with Matthew O'Toole, now I would suggest that Leo Varadkar's narrative on their friendship is dishonest, because I know, and most of the people who know Matt and know people around Matt and Matt Barrett know, that they're much closer than Leo would have suggested. And now I know there was a bit of a bit of to and froing about here, there, and everywhere, but we know that that is not the case. If this wasn't a transfer to a friend, the rebuttal, say from people like Piers Doherty and the Dáil, that this was some noble endeavor, it just doesn't stack up. It just doesn't add up. It's almost embarrassingly poor.
Yeah, can I just come in there? And I deal with a lot of whistleblowers, Jay, and I do a lot, and we do a lot of work together. And I'm going to be very critical, and I'm going to look back on what you've done, and I'm going to say, yeah, you blew the whistle. Yeah, you had nice confidential information. Yeah, everything you say about Varadkar's interaction with the NAGP is true. Bottom line, you haven't whistleblown. All you've done now is make it easier for politicians to share documents and walk away and say, look, my intention was good. So regardless of your intention in the first place, the conclusion when you get to the end of it is now it's acceptable for any politician to share private confidential information with any party they so wish and not face any consequences. That's the actual outcome of the whole thing.
How is that the outcome of the whole thing?
Because that's what the Dáil has decided. It's fine. He didn't commit any offence. He's free to do it again.
Well, no, the Dáil hasn't decided that yet, Martin. So the Dáil, you know, there's a SIPO investigation which remains to be, which has to go through due process. Would I have any confidence in that? Well, considering the fact that Leo Varadkar essentially appointed Ger Feeney, a senator who was a lobbyist for the NAGP, to SIPO last week, despite the fact that she only ever lobbied for the NAGP.
I get that the cards have been stacked, and I get that that's the case, that the cards are being stacked. But I would have thought that the village, yourself, and the other people involved would have had the acumen enough to actually win at the end of it, and you haven't. And it has developed into a kind of a tit for tat, and Varadkar's out through the door. He's away with it. He's actually away with it.
I would disagree with you entirely, Martin. And I would, for these reasons, okay? In my view, and in the view of people whose opinions I would, you know, I would value, I think Leo Varadkar is damaged now politically. I mean, Leo Varadkar was known as someone who leaked, someone who was indiscreet, essentially prior to this. This has damaged him. It's damaged him in Europe. It's damaged him within his own party, and it's certainly damaged him regarding his coalition partners. The only reason Leo Varadkar wasn't forced to resign or didn't step down was because it would have precipitated the collapse of the government, potentially. You've got to really see it for what it is. The person responsible for Leo Varadkar not losing his job over this, which he should have done, and he may yet do, I mean, subject to a Garda investigation and a SIPO investigation, and the fact that this story certainly hasn't gone away, and it won't be going away. So the context is political survival. It's nothing to do with anything else. It's to do with trying to make Matthew O'Toole look like a fantasist, a friend of a friend. He's a guy who likes to embellish himself. Well, he wasn't a guy that liked to embellish himself when Leo Varadkar went to the charity he was promoting to get his photographs taken during the pandemic, when Leo Varadkar apparently went back to the front line. He wasn't a fantasist when he was anointed essentially by Fine Gael and RTE to become a narrator of COVID-19 on RTE. He wasn't a fantasist then. He wasn't a fantasist when he attended Leo Varadkar's inauguration speech in the Dáil, when he attended his home.
But I completely agree with you on all of this. I agree that your story And everything that you had to put into it, including the relationship between Mahu O'Toole and the Taoiseach, I agree with you completely. What I'm saying is you had an Opal goal, you took your shot, and it was saved. And arguing about from here till kingdom come is not going to put that goal in the back of the net, or that ball in the back of the net.
No, it's not.
At all.
No, it's not. And you're right. I mean, look, did I think that in the current circumstances, which I've kind of outlined to you, regarding the political situation, a very precariously unholy alliance of a Green Party, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, did I think that this would get the support within Fianna Fáil we need on the vote for him, for the vote of no confidence? I didn't think so at all, because it would have been absolutely the turkeys voting for Christmas. So this couldn't have come at a worse time, and it couldn't have come at a better time. The problem for us was, and for me personally was, you know, I wanted this to get into the public domain as quick as we could after we'd gone through the due process. And for me personally, it's not about just, as I said, rolling the grenade in. I want to use this as a platform to give the public of all colours, creeds, beliefs, political denominations and none, working, not working, insurance paying, not insurance paying, a view of how business is done here. And also, I wanted to set out
if that's the case, that job is done.
Yeah.
Because you've actually shown that. We've seen, everybody, like, with the question was asked by Aidan O'Riordan to the Taoiseach, you know, have you done this before? And he said, not of this nature.
Yeah.
You know, it was an admission that, as I've said to Martin, that 2 hours where he was questioned, if you could condense it down to 7 minutes,
yeah,
it was an indictment on himself, by himself, in a lot of the stuff he said. And that is true. So absolutely, I accept that he's damaged. I accept he will forever be known as a leak. And I accept that Fine Gael pulled rank and said to the other two, and said, if you want to, he could just step down. It didn't have to precipitate a general election. Fine Gael could sit there and say, but if you do, we'll go back to the people, and Fianna Fáil will be destroyed, and the Greens are already have destroyed themselves in government. So political decisions were made. And sure. But Martin is also right that now the signal is, if you can come up with a backstory that says, you know, I didn't know that the NAGP's office was just across the road. I wasn't sure that it was just there. I didn't arrange for it to be delivered that way. And, I in my own handwriting, I stuck it in the post to my pal. All of that, look, no one really accepts that. None of the opposition do. And I don't think anybody who were in coalition with the government accept that. But nonetheless, what we've seen isn't going to change anything. You've seen, as you pointed out, Geraldine Feeney appointed the SIPO. What we've actually just seen is the system regroup and turn around and say, gather around the troops and make sure
circle the wagons.
And this is what has happened. And
no offense to Geraldine Feeney.
No, but Geraldine Feeney has to do her job. But her job is clear. Like, again, I go back on it. I've made this point on the podcast. Leo Varadkar was the health minister. He said on the floor of the Dáil when he was being questioned about this, that he had unfinished business with health. Yeah. And now he claims that he didn't know that, you know, this was going on. And then he claims also that Geraldine Feeney comes in. All of that, the timeline is just, if he didn't know, then he was no good at his job. You know, that's the alternative here. What I suppose, ultimately, and I put it to you this, ultimately, do you think that anything will change on the back of this?
Yes, I think it will. And the reason I think it will change is, I mean, I wouldn't have done this. Someone recently, so quite close to me, said, this could be the end of you. I mean, it isn't the end of me. It's the beginning of something. Because I think what we need to do is we need to have people, and I'm not suggesting it's me, but we need people who really feel what is important is, you know, what it should be important is people, citizens, how they're treated, how their care is delivered, okay? And it's not important right now. It's just unimportant, okay? Now, regarding the sort of leak, Varadkar, and I would suggest it was a transfer of a document, not a leak. A leak, you know, sometimes could be in the public interest. Something is leaked. This wasn't in the public interest. This was purely because it was his mate. And that's very important for people who are listening to this to understand. If you have mates in the Irish political and, you know, elite circles, you will get things, you will get advantage. And that is illegal. It's wrong. It's morally wrong. There was a report released last week in the UK that if you had political contacts and went after a PPE contract, you were 10 times more likely to be awarded one of those contracts. The Good Law Project ran this. We're going to be looking at COVID-19. We're going to be looking at how the PPE contracts have been awarded. We're going to be looking at the charity sector, and we're going to be looking at how politicians interact with the financial mechanisms of our health system. So is this finished? It absolutely isn't finished. It's a platform for us to go forward and try to challenge the dysfunction. And we're going to do that in a very innovative way, I think, through a thing called Health Reform Ireland, which is going to basically package the information, be it a 280-page HSE or CRO report or whatever. They're just not interested. So we're going to modernize that data, present it to the Irish people. You know, we're going to tell people about the salaries that, you know, 2 years ago, somebody in the HSE was paid €600,000, while we've hundreds of kids waiting for surgery, while we've got such desolate outcomes for our people. It's just wrong. And it has to stop.
We've known that for a long, long, long time, Che. And I'm going to bring you back to whistleblowing. And I know you don't like to call it that, but I like to learn things about whistleblowing as we go along. And that's what we do. We talk to whistleblowers. They tell me their details and we try and find the missteps. Where did you miss the steps? Why didn't you nail them?
Yeah. Look, from the outset, I would have been very surprised if, you know, because essentially, look, if you can imagine it, when we were doing this story, it was myself, Michael Smith, and a couple of others in the village down on the quays, you know, behind our computers. And over across the water, over in government buildings, you've got the Fine Gael machine. I think they spent €30,000 a week on spin. You know, this was me, Michael, and a couple of other trusted friends versus this machine. And the machine is very powerful. And the machine doesn't like to be challenged. It's well-resourced. It spends public money to portray things which, in my view, are dishonest. Why didn't we win? What would a win have been? Leo Varadkar scalp? I mean,
I don't like the use, because once you start down the use, the word of scalp and heads on plates.
You're suggesting that what is, define a win. Yeah, what would a win have been?
A win would be Leo Varadkar resigning. A resignation from his position, particularly where he's involved in employment. That would, he didn't have to resign as tarnished, but he certainly had to resign the brief that he has where he may be involved in negotiations with unions.
I think he should have resigned. And I would have thought, I would have been very happy to see him resign. Again, Varadkar is a very capable politician.
No, he's not.
He is.
Okay, he's not. I hate that narrative around it. He's not. He's a very well managed politician.
Yes. That's a good point. I'll take that. He's very well managed. Now, we saw when he drifted off his notes when Piers Doherty had him on the ropes in the Dáil, he was terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, he went the color of the lid on my coffee. And he was blabbering and flapping. Okay. I thought if we had had Piers Doherty on him for another hour, he would have been seriously damaged. But look, given the current context, and Martin, I think you'll have to agree with me, the current context is unusual. In a pandemic with a hastily cobbled together coalition, which is essentially anyone but Sinn Féin, Micheál Martin, Eamon Ryan, and Leo Varadkar are far more worried about Mary Lou MacDonald right now, I would suggest, than they were about Shea Bowes or Matthew O'Toole. Okay, the problem was this could hold them; it could get a little water in, and it could diminish Leo Varadkar's, you know, angelic idea on, you know, on social welfare fraud. They're the enemy of us all. You know, Sinn Féin doesn't want any white middle class guys in their party. You know, all this type of narrative. Now he cannot do that again. He cannot stand up and talk about dignity. He cannot get up and talk about, you know, honesty in politics, because every time he does that, people are going, you know.
Well, yeah.
Over in Europe, for example, in Europe, if he goes for a job in Europe now, which would have been his destination, EU commissioner, you know, I don't think so.
Look at Charlie McCreevy and then tell me that it makes any difference whatsoever.
It was a long time ago. I don't know. I'd say McCreevy was a long time ago. Look, Martin, you got to admit, We gave him a bloody nose, you know? That's not
bad. You did. You did. You gave him a bloody nose. But my question is, could you have done more? Was it the correct use? I mean, you hand me something that says confidential and that has been passed around by TDs to their pals. I'm immediately looking at how far can I spread that? Who are the best people to talk to? How do I get this on the front page of a national newspaper? And that's how I look at it.
Well, you know what? Interesting enough, Martin, the national newspapers like the Times came, a senior reporter from the Times, if you like, came to meet me and verified everything I'd shown him on the original phone. He looked through it all. He agreed it was the correct data. And then he refused to publish it based on they don't trust WhatsApp messages, etc. Now, they then published it. They published the narrative. I think the national press, the big papers, okay, who are what? The Times, the Indo, the Sunday Business Post. Now, the Business Post, I think, carried very plausible reporting on it. And the rest of them just narrated the government, so that nothing to see here, move along. And that's because they're part of a government spin machine, in my view. I think, you know, essentially the Irish Times was weak. I think they didn't interrogate the reality here, that there was a crime committed potentially. They ignored that. They didn't want to run with it. And you got to suggest, why is that? If this was any other country in Europe and a European premier had handed a document that said confidential, you know, secret essentially, to his mate, he probably would have been marched out of government buildings with his hands cuffed behind his back.
Oh, I agree with you there.
It's nothing to see here. So is the mainstream media culpable in that? You have to ask
hang on, Shay, we can make that, we can put that out there, but we can also say how clear, in terms of the political correspondents who dealt with this, they're also they're tired into it. We call it the Leinster House bubble. We talk about the world that they operate in, but they're also pragmatic. They understand where their information comes from, and they also understand the numbers. And they knew that unless the blow, as Martin puts it, was fatal, that the numbers were going to tell, and they knew that they'd made a calculation. And before he took to his feet to defend himself, they said, this is over.
Sure.
Because they had already heard from the Greens and from Fianna Fáil that they had, you know,
company line had been rolled out.
Yeah, I think I had Martin, you correct me on this. I think I had put out saying Eamon Ryan is only ready to push the send on the tweet that says move on. You know, it's ready to go, and that was the case. So, you know, again. Is the industry in trouble? Absolutely. We've no doubt about it. We speak to political correspondents and journalists all the time. They are doing, some of them do phenomenal work, but there is also a embedded nature to a lot of the reporting, and that is because that's the hand that feeds.
You know, the machine works against the machine, guys. That's how it works, okay? These are, you know, where do most of these political correspondents get most of their information from? Leinster House are from Shannon Aaron. In the Business Post, you know, there was a story done, you know, and essentially it was intimated in the Business Post. Look, you know, senior Fine Gael people or people in the Fine Gael party have said Bose has to be very careful about his medical businesses going forward. You know, that's a threat. I mean, that's a threat to me. It's a threat to people to keep your head down, be quiet, nothing to see here, move along. And Martin, I suppose you're saying, you know, you didn't knock him out. You bothered him, you know, you gave him a bloody nose. Also, what I've tried to do is to say, you know, you can't go through your life. I'd rather burn my shack on the tip than live on the tip. Okay. And that's how I'm going to go forward with this. I'm not willing to be part of that dysfunction. It's just wrong.
Whilst I agree with you, I also think that, you know, look for misbeats in where it went. And for me, the obvious big missed beat in the whole thing was that you went through Village. That was the obvious misbeat in the whole thing.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a competitive element to this. When you go with one publication, and the mainstream press were probably, you know, this was probably one of the bigger political stories, I'd suggest, you know. Why did I go with Village? I went with Village because I think Michael Smith is a man of great intellect and great, you know, courage. I think he's a very good human being.
And I think I'm not denying that. I'm looking more at reach. And
I've got to say, the Village have, you know, and Michael is a barrister by trade. So he does have a particular filter he puts everything through, which is very important to me personally, that we did that. But the other thing is the intellect there. I didn't believe. I mean, look, you know, we could talk and talk about the free press in Ireland. You know, is there objectivity in the press on really pertinent issues, or is it, you know, influenced by a very you know, dominant sort of political party, let's say, at the time, at the moment, when it comes to media? But the Village is independent. It is very independent. It is small. It has a small readership, but it's, which has grown. I mean, and I think it can grow to be a plausible narrator of, you know, an eco-left, an eco-left sort of agenda in Ireland going forward, which I would be broadly aligned with. So I don't regret going with Village at all, because I'll tell you why. I don't need to be perceived as perfect, and I don't think Village does either. But I think the idea that we believe that we can get a story to the public outside of these more rigid channels is very important to me. And I think we've done that. That's why I'm here today talking to you guys.
I accept that. I just want to go very quickly wrap up, because I know you have another thing to get to. What do you say to the claims of your anti-Israel, of homophobia, of a Russian spy, of the no? But I mean, this stuff is out there in the ether. What?
The next call I'm taking is, so I have to report in. You know.
Yeah. Well, look.
Listen. I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, what's the stock answer? I can't say too much about that, because that's subject of legal action at the moment, the particular article that was written. So I can't go into it too much. But what I can say in absolute clarity is anybody who knows me, anyone in my family, any of my many gay friends, Matthew O'Toole among them, you know, will tell you I'm the opposite to a homophobe. I'm pro-choice. I'm pro, you know, individualism. I that suggestion is ridiculous. Regarding Israel, I am against Israeli policy in Palestine. Very simply, I'm not against the state of Israel. It's a democracy. There's, you know, it's like here, it's flawed. I'm against, and I would be have major problems with how the state of Israel perpetuates its presence in Palestine. Simply, that's it. Pro-Russia. I would be concerned about NATO. I think NATO is potentially very hawkish. It's expanding its presence along Russia's border. I you know, we look at Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya. We look at 30 million dead people across the globe since the end of the Second World War. And it wasn't Russia who perpetuated those wars. It was the United States. So am I pro-Russia? No, but I think Russia gets a bad rap. Russia needs to reform. It needs to do work, major work on its human rights, its gay rights. You know, I've supported Peter Tatchell. I mean, this narrative is untrue, inaccurate, ill-informed, out of touch. And again, it's subject to a legal process now. Okay. So I can't really go into too much, but I'm more than happy to be interrogated on my political views another time, lads.
Yep.
Oh, well, I generally think that, yeah, you've bloodied his nose. His reputation is tarnished. I agree with you on all of that. I also think that it has lowered the bar in the Dáil. The end result is that the bar is lowered. And that's a disservice to us all. That is a disservice. And you didn't cause that. That's a function of how the politics is dysfunctional, that it has lowered the bar. But as a whistleblower myself, who helps other whistleblowers, I stand back and say, at the end of it all, who benefit? Who benefited? Who has been exonerated? Who has faced the music? Who has benefited from the situation? And the big benefit from the situation is Village got more subscribers. Fradkirk got a bloody nose. You got nothing, and you're the whistleblower. Yeah. So my critical comes from the fact that you as a whistleblower are no further along the road than you were before you broke the story. Ergo, bar a bloody nose in the Dáil, it hasn't actually achieved much.
Well, I think it's the beginning of something. And I think I think, you know, I like to talk, as you've probably realized in the last half an hour, maybe a bit too much. So I think, you know, my job now is going to be connecting the Irish people with dysfunction in our health system, showing them how the money's spent. I think we've lost touch with it. We just think it's doomed. We can't fix it. It's the only thing in this republic that either a loved one or ourselves, we got to fix it. And the way to fix it is the way you fix everything. It's through connecting people to the realities. And I think we've lost touch with that. So that's the platform I'm going to push for. And by the way, the story isn't over yet. There's an active complaint with the Garda National Economic Crimes Bureau. There's a SIPO investigation. And there are other avenues to this story, which we're actively investigating, which I'll be happy to chat to you lads about in the future.
Well, I'm glad you did it, Shay. I'm more glad you did it. I think, you took the opportunity, you did it. So that makes me happy that people see you can actually blow the whistle on these people and walk away. So in that sense, yeah, I'm glad you did it. I am absolutely glad you did it and well done.
Right. That must be phenomenal that you got Martin's endorsement at the end.
Yeah.
that's all that matters.
You know what I said? I'd give him a few bob, in an envelope marked strictly confidential. Yeah. But he's not Jim a good friend.
Let's not go there. Jay Bowes, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Thanks. Folks, we need people to help us out. We genuinely do. There's a lot of work going into this. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And for that, there's nearly 400 additional posts that are exclusive content, and you get lots and lots of other stuff. And even Martin even wrote a blog this week, unfortunately.
I did.
Don't you can skip that if you want.
About whistleblowing.
Yeah. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.